Hello, Growcast listeners. Thank you so much for tuning in today. We have a great interview ahead with Todd McCormick, very, very famous figure in the cannabis industry. It's a wonderful conversation. It goes long. He was a pleasure to talk to. I would describe him as a fundamentalist and a very good person and an activist. So he's got a lot to say, some really interesting stuff. Hope you guys enjoy the show. Before we get started, today's sponsor is Greencraft Distribution. Just go to greencraftdistribution.com and promo code GROWCAST gets you 10% off just for listening to this show. Greencraftdistribution.com has everything you need for CBD products and a bunch of growing accessories too. For you growers, they've got air purification systems and some great additives and nutrients for bloom enhancing. They have Cold War Organics, some microbial products. It's a really great online hydro store. You got to check it out. Greencraftdistribution.com, promo code GROWCAST for 10% off. And members at mygrowpass.com get 25% off site-wide, which is very cool. So go and check it out, greencraftdistribution.com, for all your CBD needs, your grow accessory needs, odor removal, tie-downs, all sorts of cool stuff. Greencraftdistribution.com for your online hydro store needs. Promo code GROWCAST. Thank you all so much for listening. Love you guys. I hope you have a wonderful weekend. I will talk to you later on. Without further ado, enjoy the show. Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to GrowCast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. Before we get started, could you please tell a friend about the show, share GrowCast with a friend, and make sure you're subscribed, give us a rating and review. We always appreciate that. We have another legendary cannabis guest on the line. I feel so blessed on this show. I feel like I'm hopping from legend to legend. Today, we have Todd McCormick on the line. How you doing, Todd?
Good morning. I'm doing really well. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on the show, man. We appreciate you taking the time to do this. You got a bunch of stuff going on. Why don't you start with the new book, From Cancer to Cannabis? Tell us about that.
Well, you know, as a child, I had cancer 10 times, and I have been asked a lot because of my cancer history, you know, how people can benefit from the use of cannabis, how it works. And I've probably written, you know, the same email 1,000 times to people explaining cannabinoids and decarboxylation and essential fatty acids and hemp seed and, you know, all of these different elements of cannabis. And I decided to put it down into a book because I realized there was just so much confusion when it came to things like THC and THCA, or, you know, why CBD is considered to be non-psychoactive, or a lot of this stuff. And I think that clarifying it so that people can better understand it will help them be able to better heal themselves with it. Mm-hmm. So my contributors, it kind of goes back a bit. I'm close friends with Dr. Lester Grinspoon, who turned 91 yesterday and is a Harvard professor who wrote the book Marijuana Reconsidered way back in 1971 after his son Danny was diagnosed with cancer and his wife procured some cannabis for Danny and it helped him in his treatments. And it really turned Dr. Grinspoon's view of cannabis completely around, and it caused him to write the book Marijuana Reconsidered. Years later, he would also write the book Marijuana, the Forbidden Medicine. And that was also really pivotal, I believe, in our society's starting to understand cannabis and the benefits that it provides to us. And Lester had sent me a white paper called Caniopathic Medicine. And it's a word or a term that he made up. But I guess when you're a Harvard alumni, you get to make up terms. And,
you can get away with that sort of thing.
Yeah. And what it really refers to is treating your endocannabinoid system with cannabinoids. And it's a simple concept. But one of the things that he points out, which I found to be incredible, is that cannabis is the only plant in the plant kingdom that makes cannabinoids. There are other plants that make what are called cannabinomimics, which are a metaphor I would use. Picture having a whole bunch of master locks, and you have a whole bunch of master lock keys, but only one of them will actually unlock the locks. That key is a cannabinoid. All the other keys that'll fit in the lock but won't turn are cannabinomimics. So what happens is you have plants like coca and stuff that have chemicals similar to cannabinoids, but they won't do the things cannabinoids will do, which would be decrease inflammation or decrease, you know, intraocular pressure for glaucoma patients or a whole host of things. I would sound like a, you know, medical book if I just start rattling off all the things cannabinoids did.
Right.
But that in mind blew my mind. And when I you know, asked Dr. Grinspoon if I could publish his paper. He said, well, Todd, the New England Journal of Medicine is considering publishing it. And if they say no, I suppose you can. And I felt like an ant next to a skyscraper, honestly. But he said, no, I'm serious. You know, Todd, more people know me for being in your two documentaries than pretty much my entire body of work. So I think maybe you'd be the best person to publish it anyway. So New England Journal of Medicine passed. So I started actually working on putting my book, From Cancer to Cannabis, together with cannabinopathic medicine. And then I also approached Robert Clark, who is the author of Marijuana Botany and Hashish, and more recently, Cannabis Evolution and Ethnobotany. And I asked him if he would contribute, and he gave me a beautiful piece on terpenes called Fragrant Medicine. And you know, if you look at the cannabis plant, you know, cannabinoids would be, you know, the metaphor of it being a plane going to take you up and get you high. The cannabinoids are the engines that thrust you up, and then the terpenes are like the rudders that direct the flight, and right. and will direct how it affects you and how it feels. So they play really crucial roles. And you know, anybody that thinks no, that's not true, all you have to do is get some really good cannabis and smoke it, and then leave it on your coffee table overnight. And the next day when you come back, it's going to be dry, and it's not going to have the scent. It's not going to have the body. It's not going to have the flavor, but it will still have all the cannabinoids because those will not evaporate. And then suddenly you're going to realize, wow, those terpenes were really important.
Right. Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
And so taking it into these, into this as a whole, I'm explaining to people about cannabinoids and terpenes, how they work together. And I'm going beyond that because I'm also the editor of the book, The Emperor Wears No Clothes by Jack Herer.
Mm-hmm.
I've been an editor of that book since 1994. I designed the cover. I grew the leaf that's on the cover. And I was there, you know.
That's
so
cool.
But Jack was like a dad to me. And one of the contributors to our book was Dr. Roberta Hamilton, who was a UCLA professor who was a nutrition specialist. And she didn't smoke cannabis, but she had really stumbled on the essential fatty acid content of hemp seed and realized that, you know, as she would put it, oh my goodness, the federal government has outlawed the most nutritional plant on the planet,
right?
Which she thought was obnoxious. So if you look at cannabis approaching you as a healing agent with gifts, in one hand is her trichromes with her terpenes and her cannabinoids, but in her other hand is the hemp seed with its complex proteins and its essential fatty acids. And it doesn't just have essential fatty acids. It has a perfect balance of what's called W6 and W3, which are linoleic and linolenic acids. And then it has an enormous amount of W9, which is GLA, which is why you see fish advertised. And what your listeners should really realize is that one thing that blew my mind when I was studying essential fatty acids was fish do not make EFAs, and animals, contrary, don't make proteins. We don't have the essential building blocks, the amino acids, naturally to create the proteins or the EFAs. So we accumulate them. So if you take salmon and you raise them in a fishery without
they don't have the same omega 6 fatty acids, right? And they actually have more of the unhealthy fatty acids, which are linked to like causing cancer, omega 3s and stuff like that. Is that kind of what you're getting at?
Yeah, exactly. So what happens is what it is like when we eat animals, it's almost like chewing on a sponge to get water, because realistically the animal is just a carrier for the proteins or the EFAs.
100%.
And her point to me was skip over the animals and look at your food scientifically. And when you do, you'll realize you need the balance of this. And at the time it was 1994 that she was basically schooling me on all this. And there was a movie that had come out just a couple of years earlier called Lorenzo's Oil. And the movie is Hollywood, of course, but it's a true story about a family that was treating their son with a combination of canola oil and olive oil, because what it would do is it would raise the W6 to W3, because you do need both. It's just that you need the W6 and W3, and it like is it the 3-to-1 combination, so that you don't get a EFA deficiency like you do with, for instance, flax oil. So so hemp seed oil not only has it, it has it in the perfect proportions for human consumption. And she pointed out to me that the oil they were trying to make in the movie Lorenzo's Oil by mixing together the canola and the olive, she says, is still not as good of a profile as the hemp seed oil.
Wow.
Yeah. And Dr. Udo Erasmus, a doctor out of Canada who wrote the book Fats That Heal, Fats That Kill, he actually, interestingly enough, did a whole chapter on hemp seed nutrition going all the way back to 94, 95 in his book Fats That Heal, Fats That Kill. And he actually states that it took him about 2 years to develop paper-thin skin that dried out easily and cracked through to exclusive use of flax oil that he set out to make his own perfectly balanced oil. Wow. And he wrote in his book, he says, but then the fatty acid composition of hemp seed oil arrived in the mail. And he says, there was my perfect balance. Jeez. Mother Nature beat me to it by a few hundred million years.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But you know, what's funny is then when his oil came out, he re-edited that paragraph. And if you look at his book from 1994 and 5, it says what I just stated. If you look at the ones from 96 on, when he had Udo's oil out, he took that part about Mother Nature beating him to market by a few hundred million years.
Right.
You know, suddenly
that's
going to
hurt sales.
Yeah, exactly.
That's going to hurt the wallet. So, but it's interesting you touched on that, because the fact is we are relearning this stuff. One of the segments we do on this show that we don't do enough anymore is cannabis history. And we've taken a look at a couple different ancient cultures that use cannabis medicinally, going back to the oldest medical compendium there is known to man, the Pen Zhao Qing in China. So it's like we're having to relearn this, but we're understanding it at a deeper level than we ever could before, and also perfecting it. That's really the holy grail, right? Is finding out why the things work the way they do and amplifying all the beneficial effects, right?
Yeah, like any scientist, I believe the unknown is what excites me the most. And it's really where this is all at. I mean, 25 years ago, we were just discovering what we now call the endocannabinoid system. So in 93, 94, 95, when we were getting this information in, Jack Herer and I being the we at the time, and we were considering trying to stick it into the emperor, it was really, 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 really new. And now, you know, but I also have to state, back then I practically lived in a Kinko's at night, because I would make all the photocopies and I'd go to the colleges and I'd go to the places we were tabling and I'd be handing out, you know, photocopies of the book, The Emperor Wears No Clothes, to try to convince people that they should look at cannabis seriously. Mm-hmm. But now we have PDFs and the internet, and it's a lot easier to disseminate information. I mean, prior to PDFs, back when I started my activism, man, we had a meeting about this thing called portable document files that were coming. And we were going to be able to put all this stuff into one little document and just send it to people, email it. It was going to be crazy. And you think about it, though, now that we're all learning at the speed of light,
yeah,
this is changing everything. And, you know, the old saying that you can fool some of the people some of the time, but now that people can go to colleges and university databases all over the world and compare knowledge and come back with their own assessments is changing everything.
It is.
And this is where I think cannabis is going to shine. And the book, you know, From Cancer to Cannabis, even though I've done some really mainstream things like the Culture High for cannabis, I felt like this is going to be the most mainstream thing I've ever done, because everybody, every cop, every DEA agent, every jailer, every prosecutor, every judge that has ever locked somebody up for cannabis has an endocannabinoid system. And everyone they love also has an endocannabinoid system. And someday when they're sick, they're going to look to cannabinoid-based medicines to help them, because their ignorance will no longer get in their way, because they or their loved ones will be dying.
Yeah, that's what always does the trick, you know. Suddenly when it applies to your camp, that's when, you know, stigmas come down and dogmas are questioned and things like that.
That's exactly right. Every cop's not a cop when it's his kid that has cancer and suddenly it's his kid needs weed.
Of course.
Yeah, then he's like, well, no laws in my way. Right.
That's just human behavior.
Right. And cutting through this hypocrisy is what a lot of our activism's been all about. I mean, for me, as an activist, for the longest time, I was considered a hero in our community because I was legalizing cannabis. Well, you get to, you know, Proposition 64 a couple of years ago, and now I'm a zero in the community because I'm legalizing cannabis. And all these people that are making money off of the black market are throwing stones and insults and you know, the worst and worst of allegations at me, simply because they feel threatened by the competition and the profits dropping. And my message to people like that is, hey, we were never activists to protect the profits of small farmers. We were activists to protect people from going to jail and to get the people that were in jail out of jail. We were activists because we didn't like Child Protective Services showing up and kidnapping our kids because we were growing cannabis or smoking cannabis instead of drinking wine or doing shots of whiskey. That's why we were activists. We were never caring about the bottom line price of cannabis. And when people step to me talking to me about, we've been growing pot for 20 years, what are we going to do? I say, get a job. How about get a job? So should the rest of us pay $100 a pound for organic broccoli in order to keep a group of organic broccoli farmers balling? You want big trucks? Yeah, man, grow broccoli for the black market, man. And I'm so sick of it. When you consider that we walk into supermarkets and there are bushels of sunflowers in front of the entrances often for $20. Well, anybody that grows stuff knows that sunflowers take between 85 and 120 days to flower. Cannabis? Shit, I could have you bushels of cannabis flowers 56 to 70 days fresh.
Yeah.
$20 a bushel? I mean, to me, this is when it's going to have to change, because for a long time, we've been getting convinced to pay $100 a pound for broccoli, thinking it was a good deal. But in reality, we shouldn't have been paying thousands of dollars a pound for flowers. That was only a direct result of prohibition. And anyone who thinks that they should continue to get ridiculous prices for vegetable material is higher than I could ever get.
Well put, Todd. You know, having Chris Trump on the show, he owns Natural Farming Co. He is a macadamia farmer, and he has a really incredible story about how he switched from traditional synthetic farming practices to a organic microbe-based farming practice and actually increased yield and profit on his farm through organic practices. And he said, man, people telling me they can't afford selling their product for, you know, 600 a pound, 800 a pound. He's like, my macadamia nuts sell for like $4 a pound or whatever it is, like, you know, some thin ass margin. Like, you can make it work. It's just not the same way. And I have got some of those growers on the show before who I just think don't really quite understand, first of all, the priorities, like what you're talking about. There really are priorities here. And then also just basic economics. I mean, this is what happens with a boom and a bust. What did you think was going to happen? And I feel for them, because it's all out of self-preservation, right? This is a reaction they're having because they're threatened with a legitimate threat. But I do like people like you who aren't exactly here to hold their hand. And it's like, man, like, do you realize how good we have it now compared to any other time? Like, I'm sorry you got effed, but like you said, like, go get another job. Like, deal with it.
They didn't, though.
Move on.
They didn't get effed. Nobody promised them a profitable prohibition era profit farm. You know, it's illegal.
No, that's exactly right. They didn't get effed. They had their time. In fact, they should be blessed to have. You know,
well, you know what, though, in all honesty, there's a lot of people that haven't had their dogs shot by cops or had to get bailed out of jail or done any time for jail. And it really shows. It really shows that they have no clue of the type of trauma that us as
for
an
sure.
entire community was experiencing, and why some of us, like me, fought so hard for so long, was willing to give up everything, go to prison as a big fuck you to the man, and come back out and do it all again, because I knew I was right and I knew the world would change. And I knew that you can't back down to ignorance. You have to push it over, or you're going to just live with that ignorance for the rest of your life. And, you know, these people, it really bothers me to my core, because when you look at how important cannabinoids are for everybody, you know, creating homeostasis within our bodies, modulating our entire being from happiness to sadness to everything about our life as a human, we need cannabinoids, and we need them affordable. And these people that are arguing for high prices, to me, are just part of the problem. They're as bad as the cops I used to debate 20 years ago.
Wow, man. What did Ed Rosenthal say on the show? He's like, I want cannabis to be so cheap that everybody's smoking it, and that when kids are thinking about whether they're going to drink alcohol or smoke weed, they'll go to the weed.
I've known Ed since 1994, and I stopped talking to Ed after Prop 64 because he wouldn't support Proposition 64 passing because he wasn't getting paid by the initiative to promote it. And I was here with the guys from Sensi that day, and me and Ben's sons, Ben Dronkers, who on Sensi sees, were all busting his nuts, saying, "Gee, isn't that a bit hypocritical? I mean, you're more like acting like a prostitute than you are like an activist, because if it's all about you getting paid, or you're not going to promote this, and you're gonna spread slanderous lies about it, that's kind of wrong, dude." You know, and you know, he defriended me on Facebook after that. It was the last time he was at my house, because I called him out on it, and I was just like, Ed, we've been friends for a long time, but get the fuck out of here with that shit. You know, people, minorities are suffering because of prohibition. People go to jail every day. Children get taken from their parents every day. And you want to worry about taxation? You want to worry about what big canopies coming in and putting little farmers out? Okay, so we should all be willing to give up our kids and go to jail occasionally because these farmers want high prices. That's whack, bro. No, it's not happening. Get out of the industry, get out of the way. And I mean it to all these people that are getting in the way of legalization. You don't deserve to be in the industry. If you think that your profits are more important than the liberty and health of your fellow citizens, friends, lovers, family members, you're a screwed up person. That's how I put it.
It's a lack of empathy, I think. If you put yourself in you know, the victim's shoes for a second, I think the priorities become clear.
Can I point something out about Prop 64? I really did support it because a lot of people don't understand the complexities of law. When we passed Proposition 215 in 1996, unfortunately, because Dennis was afraid it wouldn't pass, it didn't legalize anything. It didn't legalize our behavior whatsoever. It didn't change California law and make cannabis cultivation legal. What it did do was allow us to present a medical necessity defense in front of a state jury, not a federal. Once we were busted, our dogs were shot, our bond was posted, our families were broken up, our gardens were destroyed, only then could we go in there and beg for forgiveness based on our medical condition. That's what 215 was. And it was horrible. And I, for one, I got raided 4 times in the 20 years during 215. I spent 5 of those 20 years in a prison cell. I never cooperate. So I was prosecuted every single one of those times. When I got out of federal prison, I literally was raided 3 more times. And because I wouldn't cooperate, I was prosecuted 2013, 14, 15, 16, 17, until finally we passed Proposition 64. And it changed all of the cultivation cases from felonies to misdemeanors. So after 5 years of fighting them with Tony Serra, my attorney, they had to start all over and now recharge me with misdemeanors, at which point the judge looked at it and went, this is an incredible waste of time. And he dismissed it in the interest of justice, because pointing out that the prosecution has been the punishment.
Right.
And for a lot of us, that's what we went through. And because Proposition 64 actually legalized our activities, the 10th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution kicks in and protects our state rights, which under 215, that never happened. And then for those, you know, legally astute that are listening, go look up Section 903 of the Controlled Substances Act. It's a really short little one sentence or so paragraph that basically stipulates that because of the 10th Amendment, in cases where the federal government's rules on drugs are in conflict with the states, we're going to give it to the state, because they weren't so sure that the CSA would be constitutional if it didn't have a 10th Amendment clause that acknowledged state rights.
Hmm.
So when we legalized in places like Colorado, Washington, Oregon, and now California, the federal government really can't go into these states and do what they did to me in 1997, because the first motion I would be able to file would be a 10th Amendment saying you don't have jurisdiction.
Right.
And this is huge. And this is why we've been able to see, you know, companies and farms all over in legal states really blow up, because in many respects, the federal government's hands are tied. And if you ask any, you know, hardcore Republican, they'll say, well, state rights are important. Well, they are, you know, and in a sense, this is also why Proposition 64 was so important and why we haven't seen the DEA literally going up and down the state doing whatever it is they want, like they did for the 20 years that we had Prop 215, which didn't kick the 10th Amendment in, didn't protect us at all. Yeah.
But don't you feel like that was a necessary step? Like, I talk to these people who are mad about certain laws passing in all sorts of different states. It only allows me to grow this much, or it doesn't allow home grow, but allows this. Don't you feel that these usually, they're rarely repealed, right? So isn't it always a balancing act between, okay, yeah, maybe this isn't the perfect bill for whatever reason, prices or rights, but it might be a step in the right direction? Or can you shoot yourself in the foot by... You know?
I wholeheartedly agree with your sentiment. I'm of the judgment that a baby is not born jet skiing, you know, that they don't know how to get down a mountain on, you know, 2 skis and a couple poles that easily, that it's an acquired set of learning skills, that, you know, we're not winning the lottery ticket passing medical cannabis initiatives. We are barely getting our rights back a little bit of a time.
Totally.
And so I see this as an evolution, and I would never walk into a ballot box, and I would never vote against cannabis legalization in any form whatsoever, no matter how restrictive, because it's a step in the right direction.
That's a powerful statement.
You gotta stop. I'm lucky to be white in this country, and I'll say it out loud. I have a lot of friends that are not so white, and I've seen them get their balls. I've seen them go through hell. I've seen them prosecuted for nothing but being a minority. Mm-hmm. And they've used marijuana as an excuse to be able to take down people of color for literally decades, man. And at what point are we going to stand up for the people?
Decades. Say, dude, hey, this goes back far, far. This is something that we picked up from, and I mean, Napoleon was doing this to the Egyptians when he conquered Egypt in the 1800s. He illegalized cannabis so he can harass anyone. This is an age-old technique. This is whoever's in power going, hey, you enjoy something, how about we legalize that? Now, I mean, it's literally, this goes back way, way further. And I think you said something really powerful, which no one has taken this full fundamental aside, which is you will literally vote for any legalization with the belief that it is a step in the right direction, even if it doesn't fulfill all your needs.
So back 20 plus years ago, Jack Herer and I argued over 215 because at first it pissed him off so much.
Right.
didn't go far enough. And I said to him, Jack, stop it. It has to go somewhere.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
What are we going to do? Sit here and do nothing? Because at the time, Dennis and Jack, if you go back and you read the 1995 filings of the California Hemp and Health Initiative, it's Jack Herer's name, it's my name, and it's the lawyers' names. Mm-hmm. Because I helped write with CMI, and I had people running around giving me crap about an initiative that I helped author, which is really odd because it's like, dude, seriously, you're asking me why I don't support something I helped write. Unbelievable. And, you know, and like, it's not a matter of this or that, because if one's not funded, it's not even a player. You know what I mean? And this is the thing with Jack's old initiative. People still carry it around, was written before all of this progress, before we fully understood the endocannabinoid system. And now, if I was to sit down and Jack were to reincarnate, we were to write an initiative, it wouldn't look like that. It would be more based on a human right to cannabinoids based on the science around their endocannabinoid system, right, and the way it modulates their everyday being. So we would be much more strong about our rights. We wouldn't be asking for forgiveness or begging for a little bit of equality. We would be demanding it, as we should be doing now, equal rights. And we should have science-based fact. We shouldn't let these politicians give us this bullshit that's like 30 years old when they're standing there with a smartphone. It's like, can you do me a favor? Can you type in help? I mean, excuse me, instead of H-E-L-P, type in H-E-M-P, hit enter and read the Wikipedia page. I'll wait.
Totally.
And because I'm really that sick of it, because back 30 years ago, yeah, I understood why our politicians didn't understand what we were talking about. The books were removed from the libraries. The very Library of Congress omitted things like Hemp for Victory in our own national archive. They did everything they could to get this information away from us. But now, thank you to the internet, we can all learn and understand this. And why, that's why to me, it becomes a really important element. And even for me, after I got out of prison, as much as I love Jack Herer and his book, I moved towards film because I would get so frustrated handing somebody one of his books, and then 2 months later, they still haven't read it. And, you know, so then we did the union, the business behind Getting High, and being able to sit someone's parents down in front of a documentary for 2 hours was like life changing.
Yeah.
Because suddenly they were like, oh, my God, I get it. And that's why we ended up doing the Culture High a little thereafter, because really, it's about reaching people, because I believe the truth will set you free. You just need to experience the truth. And once you do, it changes everything.
I love it, man. Couldn't put it more powerfully myself.
Yeah, I think it's an incredible. I mean, I'm really fortunate that I had cancer as a child and I was given cannabis by my mom at age 9. I feel that it really, you know, saved me from a life of mediocrity and, you know, put me on a path of being able to help others and probably, you know, hopefully a little bit make the world a better place.
I love it, man. Can we talk a little bit about your genetics, where my listeners are going to be able to find them and all that?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. So now with the passage of the Hemp Farm Bill and then legalizing all cannabis products with less than 0.3% THC, seeds are legal, everybody. Newsflash, seeds are legal. And it allows you to basically engage in the world market. And so I just decided to open up my refrigerator and start making some of the seeds that I've been making available to other people. And I put a catalog together and I sent it to my dear old friend, Mel Frank. He found a mistake. I had to put a comma or a period in. And so then I said to him, hey, why don't you let me sell some of your seeds? Because, you know, they're not going to do anything sitting in your refrigerator. And he said to me, you know, you're right. So I went over there and I picked up some original skunk ones from him and some Durban poisons and some other varieties that he had. Mm. And it's incredible. I mean, for people listening, when I was 13, I traded a $20 bag of pot for my friend's grow book, The Marijuana Insider's Guide by Mel Frank and Ed Rosenthal. And it changed my life forever. And years later, I moved to LA in the 90s, and I met his real name is Jim Goodwin. Everybody can read a really great interview I did with him coming out in the issue of Grow Magazine. In this next issue, we're available at Barnes & Noble everywhere and growmag.com. And mm-hmm. Mel Frank played such a pivotal role in the education development for so many of us growers. And when he became my friend in the 90s, it was like meeting your hero. You know, like if, you know, like
totally
picture Jack and the Beanstalk, you know what I mean? And you go up to the castle and it was the king, you know, or the giant that threw down the seed and, you know, gave you the opportunity.
100%.
And instead of trying to run away or get killed or rip them off, you just build a castle next to him and live in the clouds was my plan. But Mel Frank really has played a huge role in to be able to, I'm the first person, he's 75 years old now, I'm the first person that he's ever let sell his seeds in his life. So it's a real honor. And then for me, I've had some really special genetics. I've been growing since the 80s. I lived in Amsterdam in 1996. And I've looked at cannabis kind of like I look at colors. There's the primary colors of cannabis. And when I say that, I mean things like Afghan, skunk, Hindu Kush, California orange.
That's a great way to put it, man. I've never heard it put that way.
Well, thank you. It really makes a lot of sense when you start getting into it, though, because what happened since then is we've done a lot of the crosses and combinations that have changed it. So then we get the secondary colors, you know, things like Tangy is a skunk crossed with California orange, for instance.
Oh, huge in the Midwest.
And things like Northern Lights number 5, and you start getting into these varieties that were crossed from some really pivotal plants. I mean, Northern Lights is also one of the primary colors of cannabis, as I call it, because when you go back into the 70s, a lot of the varieties that we were getting were coming in from Laos, Vietnam, Michoacán, Poco, Jamaica, all tropical. When you brought them up here to places like California, they didn't flower that easy. So in the mid-70s, when the hippies were going to Afghanistan and bringing back the Afghanistan plants that they were calling indica, because they were so different from these narrow-leaf drug varieties that were tropical and would flower forever, seemingly, they started mixing it. And it's the Afghan plant that was really the acrid-smelling, stinky, what we would call skunk scent. Mm. But what a lot of people fail to recognize is a lot of the Afghan plants are not that nice to grow. They're very leafy. They have a high leaf to low calyx ratio. While they have a lot of resin, they're not exactly the most potent plants. They have lower THC than the tropical varieties. So the reason they were bred into a lot of the aforementioned tropical varieties is because they shortened the flower cycle and made growing them possible.
Right.
So, but then once they got these plants to go from 16 weeks to, like, let's say 10 weeks or 8 weeks, then they started breeding away from the Afghan because they were trying to breed up the THC levels. They were trying to breed up the uniformity and the consistency. So varieties like Skunk One literally went from smelling like skunk to smelling sweet because over time, what the breeder was growing for was not an acrid scent that had low THC and a lot of leaves. They were growing for low leaves, high calyx ratios, higher expressions of THC, more uniformity, and more stability.
All derived from the tropical side.
Most definitely. And a lot of people ask me all the time, why doesn't skunk smell like skunk anymore? And it's because of refinement.
Wow.
And you can still go back and find skunks. Like, I grow a plant that is a combination of Northern Lights and Afghan, and it still smells like skunk. My girlfriend was walking the other day, and she was like, did the dog get sprayed by a skunk? I was like, no, I'm in week 8. And she was like,
I love that.
Oh, okay. And I was like, yeah, you can smell it. I get it. And, you know, but her first thought was, that's a skunk. And going back to the 80s, my grandmother used to, what do you got up there? You know, and it was like, nothing.
Dude, that was the good pot back in the day, is you'd have some in your pocket and it smelled like you stepped on a skunk corpse. You know what I mean?
Okay,
across the room.
During Prohibition, that wasn't helpful for a lot of us. We got pulled over in our cars, and a cop was like, "What's the smell of that?" And we were like, "Not that's this is not helping." So unfortunately, that. But also, what a lot of people don't realize is if you were to have one of these stinky Afghans compared to, like, you know, a Skittles or you know, a Tangy or anything that now is like fruit and savory and complex and aromatic and, you know, super high. The strawberry banana cultivar, for instance, you know, super high THC amounts, super fruity. Well, guess what? Not a lot of affy there, because if it were, it would smell like dank underwear.
Yeah.
And THC levels would be half as much, and it would be mostly leaf and not as much flower, and you'd be going, man, this ain't that great a weed. And see, this is also where I think a lot of times our memory is misconstrued, because we'll remember the scent, but we won't remember, hey, shit didn't get you that high. And then you'll smoke some of the stuff from the equator, and it's way more of a high. I mean, Neville Schumacher's, who made, you know, basically all these incredible varieties that he crossed in the Cannabis Castle, he once said that there was weed and then there was haze. Yeah, because it was so different. And I mean, for me, I was growing Afghan skunk varieties from 1984 to 1994 when I first arrived in Amsterdam. And when I got to Amsterdam and smoked my first haze, I was just like, wow. I'd never smoked cannabis that woke me up, motivated me, felt like a morning coffee before. I mean, most of the cannabis I smoked was a little narcotic, you know, make you want to chill, you know, reach for the bit in a hot tub. But there was a whole other side of it. And for me, if to use another metaphor, going back to the colors, if you had a box of Crayola crayons and you had a box of 8 or a box of 16, you can do only so much with the 8. You have more options with the 16. In many respects, there are 16 colors of cannabis in the box. It's just that we're only playing with the first 8 crayons, because we're only growing plants that take 8 to 9 weeks to finish flowering.
Mm-hmm.
Most I know don't grow anything that takes truly 10 weeks or more to finish flowering. And there's a whole world between weeks 10 and 16 that almost nobody in North America has ever experienced.
So true.
No haze. Yeah. And for a long time, you know, for people listening, the cannabis you smoked was being driven by the need of the grower, not the desire of the consumer. We wanted, as a producer, we wanted plants that flowered quickly, that yielded heavy, that made our time, you know,
yeah, resistant to pests, all that stuff that we care about.
Yep. And now that's changing, because now at the end of the day, you can grow big bud and get Threolite all you want. And then some guy's going to have Thin Mint cookies down the street that taste great, gets you twice as high for half as much pot. And he's going to be like, no one wants your weed, bro.
Yeah, totally. Now everyone wants fucking OG, which is like the most finicky, fucking ugly, scraggly plant. I'm so sick of that strain.
Hey, that's my girlfriend. Hey. You
know, no, I will always love OG. It's a love-hate relationship.
I was given OG back when she was just the Kush back in 1997 by a roommate of Josh's who read about me in the news because I got busted in Bel Air and realized we had a common friend and asked him if I wanted the Kush.
It's a funny way to make a connection.
Well, back in the day, we didn't really have the internet. And
yeah.
At Josh of, you know, Josh D. Farms and OG. And we got to talking, and he was like, you know, I know you have OG Kush. When I first met him, he goes, I just wondered how you got it. And I said, well, how would I have gotten it? And the first name he said was correct. And I was like, okay, well, now you have my attention. I was like, well, who's Mad Dog? Is that real? And he goes, that's my roommate. He passed away. Oh, my God. He said he used to leave newspaper clippings of you on the refrigerator, so when I got home from work, I could read them. Because, you know, back in the day, that was the internet, you know, a magnet in your, you know, steel fridge door.
God.
Yeah. And, you know, when they busted me back then, no one in L.A. had ever gotten busted with over 4,000 plants or got busted in a Bel Air mansion before. And, you know, the DEA didn't really do their homework. They raided me 5 days after the guy from West Hollywood running the pot club turned me in. And they really rushed into it. And that didn't work out good for them, because I had already done a lot of media, and the New York Times, the USA Today, they all had my mom's phone number. So they were like, so they just called my mom up, and suddenly the day after I'm busted in the LA Times, it's, you know, cancer patient ran pot palace instead of, you know, 26-year-old living in mansion busted with marijuana everywhere.
Right.
And it wasn't the message they wanted to have narrate. But it was the true message. I really did have cancer 10 times.
Sure, yeah.
I'd been through all that, and it was all easily documented, which the media did. So for a while there, you know, it was on the news, you know, every news cycle, and then Woody Harrelson bailed me out, so it was on again, and then it was Larry Flint's attorneys, so it was on even more, and it was inescapable for a while. And you know, I didn't like my 15 minutes of fame personally. Ever since I got out of prison, I've tried to put my projects in front of my personality, because it's always been about the message and not about my ego, which is why the Union, the Culture High, the Playboy parties, the THC Expo, Protestival, the book, Jack's book, my next book, it's really, really about the subject. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a lot of people when I get out say, well, you should make documentaries about what you went through. And I said, no, you know, we should make documentaries about why I went through it. Right. It's not about me, man. It's about the bigger picture. It's really about you. We should make a documentary about why cannabis can help you, because maybe then you'd help me get it legal. Right. We'll go with that. And so we try to motivate people, and it's still what we try to do. And now that people can grow, I started selling genetics, and I'm actually now I used to hang out with Neville back when I lived in Amsterdam, and we were playing chess one night, and he gave me a long bud of haze, and it had one seed in it, and I went to give it back to him, and he laughed at me. He said, Todd, I have a lot of seeds. And I said, sure. And he said, you can keep it. And I said, well, I hope it's a girl. He said, no, hope it's a boy, because then you can cross it with all your fantastic female cultivars. And I was just like, wow. He goes, you'll make them better. And, you know, haze makes everything better. And I was just like, I love you. And I did. I brought that. I coveted the seed. I brought it home. I did pop it. It was a boy. And then in 97, the government cut it down. yeah. F you guys. but yeah. And now probably half those DE agents that raided my house are using CBD and other cannabinoid products themselves. You know, it is
from
a quarter.
For the fucking back pains, dude, from fucking bending over. Chopping right. Plants.
Well, hopefully they have some anxiety issues from and a little bit of empathy for all the lives they destroyed while they were deep agents, you know. But you know, maybe they can get into environmental protective services and start helping us instead of hindering us in the
so I feel like I'm playing right into what you just said when someone said you should make a documentary. But have you ever thought about starting a podcast? Because I would listen.
We did Hash Church for a couple of years, and we did really big numbers, but it kind of turned into Cash Church for me, and I bailed because I wasn't soliciting to people promote their product. Well, we initially when I started, it was about education, and I really enjoyed it. But then some of the people that started getting on it realized they were seeing bumps in sales with their terpenes or their expensive hash, and they were, you know, basically would come on just to promote their crap, and I was like, I'm out of here. And then I did another one called Talking Cannabis with Sam the Skunk Man, Mel Frank, Tom Alexander, Rob Clark, Kenny of Trichome Technologies, mainly because those guys were my heroes. I mean, they have contributed more, just those handful of guys, than the rest of the cannabis community combined when you look at the body of work they've put out. And, you know, it's just I get busy. I mean, you know, you can only do so many things at once. And, you know, so now I'm focusing on seeds, and I'm focusing on trying to get genetics into the hands of people. And, you know, the name of my company is Authentic Genetics. And a little of that is because I feel like, you know, there were so many inauthentic genetics. There's, you know, so many stories of guys like Mark Emery slinging, you know, fake seeds and stuff for so long that you get sick of it. And I myself, as a seed buyer and a seeker of genetics, the worst thing you can do is lie to me or fake me out. So, you know, my whole goal is to just be as honest and authentic and transparent as possible with what I'm trying to get to people, and bring them things that they may not know they want, but once they experience, they're going to love it. You know, so what I did is I took all of these famous California cultivars and cross them to a haze mail that I made using Neville's haze. For people listening that remember Northern Lights number 5 by Haze, Neville actually made that plant and then crossed it to his haze C and called that Neville's haze. And then later he took that plant and crossed it back to skunk, or crossed it to skunk. It was never skunk in it. So crossed it to skunk and made what he called super silver haze later on. I had the one in the middle. I had the Neville's haze, and I basically went back to Sam the Skunk Man and said, hey, will you sell me the seeds you sold Neville? And he said, well, I never sold Neville the original haze seeds. I gave him 3 plants. He says, but I'll give you the seeds I didn't sell him. I said, why didn't you sell him the seeds? He goes, because I was afraid he'd take the variety and like, you know, basically make it his own, which he did. He goes, but because it wasn't mine to really sell. because it was given to him by friends and he didn't feel ownership over it. So he didn't. It'd be like giving the Jack Daniel's number 7 recipe and you don't feel like you're in a position to sell it. You know, right. I can't really give you permission to use this name and run with it. But Neville and a lot of these seed merchants, I mean, this is the game they played going into the 80s and 90s. You know, they ain't no skunks in Holland, I like to point out. Ain't none of my Dutch friends knows what a real skunk smells like to save their life because it's a Northern European animal. I mean, the only skunks that you see in Europe is Pepe Le Pew on the cartoons. It's a true story, though. Skunk was bred in the Santa Cruz Mountains, as was original Haze. California orange is very much California cultivar. I mean, a lot of the varieties that were made famous in Europe actually originated in the United States. Indysat was Indica sativa, came out of the New England northeastern area of the United States. Bubblegum came out of Indiana.
Right.
It's just that once, you know, we couldn't do anything with them here. So by bringing them to Holland, you know, Northern Lights, for instance, there's going to be an interview I do with Greg McAllister. He's now 71 years old. He lives out in Hawaii. He's the gentleman that brought Neville the cuttings and the seeds of Northern Lights. And, you know, and this is an example of the way people were treated. You know, Neville never paid a dollar for the cuttings or the seeds that he got from Greg. But later when Greg was there visiting again, he said to Greg that he paid off the cannabis castle with Northern Lights. Thank you very much. I said, did he ever pay you anything? He said, no, just told me thank you, pat on the back. And this is messed up because, like, if you owned a whiskey facility and you were bottling whiskey and old Jack Daniels walked up to your facility with old number 7 recipe and you're like, well, thanks. And, you know, made so much of it using his name that you paid off your factory. But you didn't feel any need to pay him. That's kind of whack. And that was really what happened. I mean, partly why Neville, and I wrote this piece called Legacy of a Legend. I cared for Neville. He was always really nice to me. But in the same reality is I knew a lot of people. I lived there. And I mean, I know a lot of people ripped off Sam the Skunk Man because the problem for him was his Skunk One seeds were a true inbred breeding line, which meant that once you got his seeds, you could breed them together and get a uniform, consistent outcome. Most varieties will not inbreed correctly. It takes years of breeding to get them to do that. And this is where Skunk was refined and other varieties like Northern Lights were not. So Greg had multiple Northern Lights because he was in the process of selecting them down and doing breeding, which is why you hear of Northern Lights 2, which I think is OG Kush, Northern Lights 1, Northern Lights 5, things like that. Because they had not fennel hunted the females yet, they were still a whole bunch of them to be found, if this makes sense. But Skunk was bred and refined, which is why it is in almost everything we smoke now. If you go look at the DNA sequencing of cannabis genetics, you'll see Skunk is in almost everything.
Wow.
Because it gave it that uniformity, it gave it that higher THC, it gave it that consistency that breeders were looking for. It made a variety that was unwise, that was otherwise not stable. So you put Skunk into it.
Man, love it. It's some deep insight, a crash course in cannabis that I could, it's a bounty of information, my friend.
I've been growing a long time, bro. And you know, and I've been living it forever too. So it's like when I'm talking about these people, they're not just people I read about. They're people I've hung out with and had dinners with and grown with and played chess with and spent time in my life with. And you know, so it's different for me in a lot of levels. And, you know, in a couple of years after Neville started buying the seeds from Sam, he stopped paying Sam for his seeds. He stopped buying the seeds from Sam because after a couple of years of growing them, he realized I don't need to buy these seeds anymore. I can make them myself and just knock them off, which is really, imagine if, how would the Jack Daniels family, using them as a metaphor, feel if, and they probably did get ripped off in all honesty, you should look it up, by the distillery, because at some point there should be reckoning. I heard that the Budweiser family actually just got paid 100 years later because of Budweiser being a recipe that was stolen from, you know, some family out in Europe, and they had to sue for the longest time. And, you know, but to the longest time, the brewery was like, F them, keep the money. You know, and unfortunately with cannabis, I see the same thing. I even see it now with people that are trying to lay claim going forward to genetics they make. And I laughed, you know, there are a lot of people talking about open source. It's like, so you're going to give people permission to use the genetics that you were given?
Right.
Right. Or let me get this straight. You had nothing to do with the plants you got. Nobody invented cannabis. But suddenly now the plants that you pollinate together going forward, you have say over what people do with them? I think that's utterly ridiculous. And it's not how it works, in all honesty. And it's not how it's going to happen. I mean, and if we were to stop and go backwards and repay all the people that did all the breeding on the plants that we're now making, it'd be ridiculous.
Todd, this interview has begged more questions. You've given some amazing answers, but somehow it's begged more questions than answers, which is a feat in and of itself. I would love to have you back on anytime. Where can we send my listeners as far as the book, growmag.com, obviously, your genetics? Where can we send everybody who's listening?
My website is toddpmccormick.com, just toddpmccormick.com. I'm also on Instagram at Todd P. McCormick. I'm on Twitter as Todd P. McCormick. I'm on Facebook as Todd P. McCormick. All of these projects will be there. Right now, mostly I'm on Instagram with the seeds. I'm building a website for Authentic Genetics and trying to get that online. Now, people can just email me for a catalog, todd@toddpmccormick.com, and I'll be happy to respond. And everything is moving kind of fast. I mean, I've always been passionate about so many different elements in cannabis. And now is a good time because people are so receptive to learning about it. Whereas in the past, people would look at my hemp pants and my hemp shirts and go, no way, that's not made out of marijuana fiber. I'd be like, no, it is, but they looked at me like I'm crazy. And now they don't look at me like I'm crazy anymore. Now they're starting to understand it. And that is, that acceptance and that, basically open ear is really why I feel so optimistic about the future of cannabis. And I'm excited about what's happening. I really do believe that if the prices drop and people are able to get cannabis, I mean, organic dried tomatoes sells in California for about $8 a pound. And it's comparable to organic dried cannabis. People might not want to tell you that, but it's true. And when we get down to $8 a pound cannabis, dried cannabis flowers, like we have $8 a pound dried tomatoes, I think you're going to see a lot more people being able to use cannabis in a manner that is highly medicinal, meaning that it's it's not, when you don't heat it up, when you just take cannabis and you have the THCA and the CBDA, it's not really euphoric. So you can ingest high amounts of phytocannabinoids and experience the reduced swelling or the reductions in intraocular pressure. Oh, wow. Or a lot of things. Yes. And the more science is coming out, the more we are seeing that in order to stimulate all of the receptors and all of the little sub-receptors that are stimulated by terpenes of cannabinoids, we need higher amounts of them. But what happens is a lot of the cannabis we consume is decarboxylated, which makes the THC euphoric. And that gets in our way of being able to ingest a lot of it because we get too high. Right. So if we actually can ingest the phytocannabinoids in their raw form, we can experience the modulation and the homeostasis of our endocannabinoid system without it getting in the way of us, feeling baked. And I say this, there's a great time in everyone's lives to be stoned. I mean, 11 o'clock in a hot tub on a Friday night is an awesome time to be like doing nothing and feeling baked. But if your kid has seizures and they're trying to go to school, you really don't want them baked, staring at their pencil at 10 a.m. in the morning. You want them not distracted and medicated and feeling good.
So what does this look like consuming like a cannabis salad sort of thing?
So check it out. So all right. So let me,
I've seen it. So that's why I bring it up.
No, it's true. So let me break it down like this. So cannabinoids are the chemicals. Your body makes these cannabinoids as well. When your body makes them, they're called endocannabinoids. Endo just means internal. And when the plant makes them, they're called phytocannabinoids. Phyto just basically means from a plant. So cannabinoids are cannabinoids. What changes, though, is if we heat it up, suddenly those cannabinoids, the THC, will get us really stoned. And that can be a beautiful thing, but when you look at the phytocannabinoids and the medical benefits they have, a lot of the medical benefits that they have are found when you have higher amounts of them. Right. They are not psychoactive. So a lot of people, I hate using the word psychoactive because technically CBD is psychoactive. It's just not psychoactive in the way that people are thinking of it. They're thinking
it doesn't get you stoned.
I get high. Right. So I use the word euphoric instead. Because that's really what you're trying to avoid. If you're going to work, you don't want to be all blissed out. You want to just be present. You don't want to be in the meeting like, whoa, guys.
Pretty high up here.
I had all morning, you know. No, you want to be present. And by ingesting phytocannabinoids, you can be present. You know, so something I'll do for your readers, it's in my book. So 20 years ago, I've been a Marinol patient for a long time because I actually had cancer. And I was sitting there stone staring at my Marinol pill one day thinking, synthetic molecules suspended in sesame oil encapsulated in gelatin. And I had just used an AB epoxy that day. And I thought to myself, well, what if Mother Nature gave me the AB epoxy? What if instead of a synthetic cannabinoid, I use an organic? And what instead of sesame oil, I use hemp seed oil? So I went and grabbed some hemp seed oil, put it in a frying pan, scooped up some resin powder and put it in the frying pan and heated it up. And that is decarboxylating it because heat causes the carbon chain to break and that's what makes it feel hard.
You're smoking it, you're using it in an edible, that sort of thing.
Well, the oil, hemp seed oil you would use in an edible. So I used it in an edible and I got way, way, way too high. Way too high. Like all weekend was gone. So I went back to the drawing board and I just started taking resin powder and putting it in a glass jar with hemp seed oil and sticking it in the refrigerator. And it turns out hemp seed oil is a solvent to cannabinoids and terpenes. So this is a big deal. Wow was exactly the right response because I am trying to get people away from what people are calling Rick Simpson oil. For a few reasons. One, alcohol is a horrible extraction method. It's a polar solvent that pulls a lot of the things that you don't want, mold, chlorophyll, a lot of stuff.
Think about that. And even in the smallest doses, alcohol is really a neurotoxin.
Yep, you nailed it. And it also has a boiling point of like 174. So in order to get rid of the alcohol, you have to boil away a majority of the terpenes and you have to decarboxylate the cannabinoids, which is all bad. So, and then it's really anyone who's tried to take Rick Simpson oil, it's not palatable. It's gross.
For sure. Yeah.
So getting away from that for a moment and looking at what is a healthy oil, what is full spectrum? Well, when people are talking about full spectrum, really what they're trying to say is that most of the cannabinoids are there, but it's usually BS. What really full spectrum would be, in my opinion, when it comes to cannabis, would be a combination of the hemp seed oil with all of its essential fatty acids and a combination of its cannabinoids with all of its terpenes still intact. So what I've been doing is taking my resin powder, or your listeners can take BHO, which is my favorite shatter, and just put it in some hemp seed oil and overnight stick it in your refrigerator, come back, look at it, swirl it around, it'll be gone, it will dissolve. And then what the beauty is that if you put a gram of shatter in an ounce of hemp seed oil, you're going to know exactly if that gram was like purchased here in California or in any legal state where all of the cannabinoids and terpenes are known. You're going to know, well, this gram of shatter was 80% THC, so that means it's about 800 milligrams THC in about 1 ounce of hemp seed oil, so now I know how much is there, if you get what I'm saying. And now we can dose ourselves
better,
and we don't lose any of the terpenes. It's in a cold process, and we benefit from the balance of EFAs, which we're all suffering from the lack of essential fatty acids. The reason is because fatty acids are expensive and because they're the first things that are destroyed in food processing. When they get food shelf life out of our food, normally what happens is the EFAs are gone. Even in things like naked juice, where they what they call flash pasteurize our juice, they bring it up to like $1.60 or whatever, just really quickly to kill bacteria and stuff. Well, unfortunately, they kill the EFAs too.
100%, man.
So we have to seek these out. And everyone listening should go to the health food store, pick up a bottle of hemp seed oil, start drinking it, using it instead of margarine and butter, putting it on their salads, and also putting it on their body. It has acne has a scale of different oils and they're prone to give you acne or not. And hemp has a cosmogenic rating of 0 hemp seed oil, because you can put hemp seed oil on your face and skin and it will completely absorb. It will not block pores and it will not give you acne. Everyone listening is probably going to go, that's ridiculous, but no, go look it up.
That's really
cool.
You got
an internet, you got a smartphone. Everything I'm saying can be referenced and researched now. go look it up. And it's Dr. Roberta Hamilton over 25 years ago told me that women would consider it the fountain of youth once they started putting it on their body and on their skin, because it makes tattoos look clear again, because it tightens up the skin. And it's literally like foliar feeding your body. It's like spraying on the nutrients.
That's fascinating body stuff, man. You should work with someone to put together a formula here. I mean, you have so much going on, but like, I feel like I want to take your advice, but the first thing is, who do I buy from?
Well, anybody. So this is the beauty. You can go get hemp seed oil from any health food store, Whole Foods. I purchased mine by the gallon from Amazon.com to save money. And keep it in the refrigerator. Hemp seed oil has a lifespan. People really might not realize it, but when it's fresh, fresh pressed, it's the best for consuming. It tastes the best. Mm. It's the best for your skin. As it gets a little aged, then it's just cosmetic use. Then it's just on your skin, massage oil and stuff. Then it gets a little older and it thickens up. Then it becomes like a varnish or a shellac. If you have exposed wood around your house, you can go put some hemp seed oil. It'll soak right in. It'll look amazing.
It's cool, man.
Well, our original paints and varnishes were made out of hemp seed oil. If you go back in history, before we ever built a ship and went to sea and got a whale to kill to make, oil with so we could light our lamps, we were using hemp seed oil mixed with lye because it would separate. You could take the top layer and it's flammable. Mm. Yeah, and this is also how we made our paints and varnishes before the 20th century and before we had synthetics. When I showed my grandma, who was born in 1911 at the time, she's now passed away, hemp seed oil, she smelled it and she said, "That reminds me of paint when I was a little girl." Whoa. And I said, "Of course it does, because we didn't have synthetics back when you were a little girl." I mean, my grandma remembers when they got electricity, you know what I mean? That was her cable TV moment for her. Yeah, right. Wow, is right. But think of the evolution and change we've had just in the 20th century. And a lot of the reason why they were pushing cannabis away from us is because they were trying to replace it with things like nylon and polymers and synthetics. They wanted us to use this new technology because it was all oil derivative. And yeah, they didn't want us to keep relying on what the farmers were giving us. I mean, that's the reality behind it. But when you get deep into it, I mean, all cannabis is from cannabis, because the very word canvas is a Dutch cognate of the word cannabis, because all canvas came from the cannabis plant. So all the ropes, all the sails, all the ships, maps, Bible books, everything that was on Columbus's ship that was fabric or paint was made out of cannabis. There's something called oakum, which is what they do is they take tar and they mix hemp fiber and they mat it together and they stuffed it in between the planks of the ships in order to seal the hull so they could go to sea. So if it wasn't for hemp fibers and tar, Columbus's ships would have sank. Just saying. I mean, and there were never cotton sails. There were never cotton ropes. Cotton didn't get invented. We didn't get a cotton gin. Excuse me, cotton was already invented, but the cotton gin did not get invented in patents until the 1790s. Mm-hmm. We had slavery in this country from 1619 all the way on until the mid-1860s or so. And for the first almost 200 years of it, there was no cotton gins. There was no cotton to pluck. They were all breaking hemp for the ropes and the sails and the canvas covered wagons going west.
Wow.
It's true. Cannabis played a huge role. That's why there's all this ditchweed in Nebraska and stuff, because it wasn't ditchweed. It was cant followers. It was the plants that the settlers going west were growing, because they wouldn't have had ropes. They wouldn't have had canvas covered wagons. They wouldn't have had canvas tents. Soldiers wouldn't have had canvas uniforms. None of that was cotton. I mean, when we were little kids, if you remember back before we were little kids, clothes used to be handed down, because a majority of clothes in the early 20th century wasn't made out of crappy cotton fibers. It was made out of hemp, and it lasted. So it wasn't till the mid-20th century and on that they started having, programmed death dates for products, because they wanted us to go in and buy another pair of jeans in 3 months.
Well, I think that there's an awakening going on right now, and kind of a rediscovery, and I feel really grateful to be part of it.
Oh, yeah. What you're doing is very important. I mean, we're all catalysts for the truth and the information, and trying to share it with one another is the only way we're going to teach our neighbors what we know. And I think it's our obligation to teach our children, teach our teachers, teach our friends, teach our police officers, teach our firemen, teach everyone in our community what we've learned about cannabis, because it'll benefit them too. I mean, I believe in my whole heart that when society has cannabis the way it has alcohol and tobacco, this is going to be a much happier place.
100%. Couldn't put it better myself, man. Would you please make sure to, anytime you're releasing a new project or anything drops, give us a call, come back on the show. You're welcome anytime, my friend.
I really appreciate it, and thank you very much. You're a great interviewer, and I wish you the best luck with this talk. I'll be happy to be again. Thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you, Todd. I appreciate it. Everybody listening, Growcast, at Growcast on Instagram, growcastpodcast.com. Look, what do we got here? Mygrowpass.com, the membership program, doing great over there. Thank you all so much for listening. Appreciate every one of you. This is Todd McCormick and Jordan River signing off, saying be safe and grow smarter.